From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a job interview. Now, on this Veterans Day, we examine the challenge faced by American veterans in returning to the workforce. And at first glance, the news is rather confusing. Nationwide, the federal government reports that the veteran unemployment rate has fallen to 3.2%, the lowest rate since the year 2000. Veterans have a lower rate of unemployment than the non-veteran population. That's the good news. Here's where things get blurrier. New veterans, as classified by the military, have a significantly higher rate of unemployment, higher than the national average by at least a full percentage point. And in surveys, new veterans routinely report struggling with depression, PTSD, sometimes addiction, and frustration that even if they can find a job, it's not fulfilling or capable of paying their bills. It's not always, but it is a rather routine concern. Older veterans report lower rates of unemployment and more satisfaction. Again, we're generalizing now, but that's what the picture looks like. And our guests are going to give us that picture of what veterans face and how they're trying to navigate what can be a challenging job market. So let's say hello to our guests for the hour. Laura Stradley is a veteran herself and executive director of the Veterans Outreach Center in Rochester. Welcome back. Nice having you. Thank you for being here.
And thank you so much.
Also with us in studio is Terry Winslow, a veteran and a security manager for Del Lago Resort and Casino. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, sir.
And on the line with us is Blair Morgan, a veteran and vice president of human resources at Del Lago Resort and Casino. Blair, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, Laura, let me start with you because I think that, you know, you're not only your personal experience, but the work that you're doing for VOC gives you a really good sort of perspective on this. And I admit, when I start looking at the numbers, I went, huh, the overall rate of unemployment is lower than I expected, but there are some, you know, fluctuations in the data. What are you seeing right now?
Well, I think that one of the things we have to keep in mind when we're looking at those numbers is the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes to support veterans who are returning to civilian employment. At Veterans Outreach Center, our staff, we have an entire department actually dedicated to employment and training. And they have established relationships in the employment community around us. We receive grant funding from the Federal Department of Labor. And we work very hard to ensure that veterans have the supports in place that they need to successfully transition back to civilian life, to, I think adequately convey their skill sets and to then be, you know, marketable in the job force. And I think sometimes when we hear, oh, the unemployment rate is down, you know, there's a little bit of a risk to that we think, well, that means, you know, we probably don't need to do so much support of our veterans because they must be doing a great job. And I think that part of the reason that those numbers are down is because there has been so much support put into place and a lot of education in our community. And the other thing I wanted to add to that, you know, over the years, I've had experiences sometimes with employers and they will say to us, oh, we love to hire veterans. We are so veteran friendly. We you know, anytime we've got a job opening, we want a veteran. And when you ask them, what kinds of job openings do you have? They're minimum wage jobs. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, everybody would love to get a veteran at a minimum wage job because they're going to do an amazing job and you're getting a steal. And so I think that we have, you know, continued work to do in educating our employers and our communities that a veteran brings a lot to the workforce.
Well, we're going to be touching on those various themes as we go throughout this hour on this Veterans Day. Let me ask all of our guests to talk a little bit about their own service. And Laura, you first there. Tell us about your service.
Sure. So I was in the Army. I was enlisted. I was actually a musician in the Army band for 8 years, 1996 to 2004. I did spend some time overseas and also was deployed to Bosnia. Something that I've shared a little bit about this Veterans Day that I don't often talk about, it's not a bad thing, but just, you know, that came to my mind this year was August 7th, 1998, when we had a couple of embassies in East Africa that were bombed. And it's, you know, I can remember that we were actually a group of us from my company were all over at my squad leader's house for a birthday party, and got the call from the first sergeant that we had to immediately, you know, take up our positions and start doing guard duty by midnight that night. At that time, a lot of the American installations, even overseas, didn't have permanent guard stations the way we do now since 9/11. And so I just think about, you know, for a lot of people who don't have a loved one serving in the military, they don't realize how many things happen in the world every single day that our servicemen and women are called to react to. And it's not just, you know, the bigger wars that we're involved in. After the military, you know, I guess as it relates to our conversation today about the job search process and everything, I had a master's degree. I'd gone to school at night while I was in service, and I felt like I was pretty marketable with my master's degree and my 8 years of military service. But one of the first companies that I applied to work at here in Rochester told me that my military service didn't count. And so,
why would it not count? What
they didn't feel that the experience was relevant to the work that I was seeking, and in fact, it was 100% relevant actually. But they didn't think that that was, you know, it was too different, and they didn't see the fit. And so, the words didn't count always really stuck with me. And as you can see, I've kind of made a career of advocating for veterans. But I think that there's, you know, unfortunately, some work to be done in educating people on how much it does count, actually, and how relevant it is, even if it's a little bit of a different field, you know, that somebody's getting into.
How long ago did you get that phrase thrown at you, didn't count? When was that?
Yeah, that was 11 years ago. I've hung on to that.
It's a good thing you're over that. No, in many ways, it sounds like you've really used that to sort of burnish the work that you're doing now. When you say it should count 100%, you know, again, I don't know a lot of the specifics involved in that, but is there any job where you think that the work ought not sort of have an impact or count in some way?
Definitely not. You know, I think people who serve in the military, and we were chatting about this actually before we came on the air, but, you know, they have so much at a young age in most cases that they are responsible for, millions of dollars in equipment, people's lives. They're living on their own in faraway places and experiencing different cultures. I mean, there's no way you come out of that anything less than, you know, potentially bringing a lot to a civilian workplace. And so, you know, of course, some people do struggle with some of the challenges that they had in service and with some of the transitions after the fact. But by and large and in general, men and women who have served bring a soft skill set unlike no other, you know, like no other, I should say. And they are adaptable. They're ready to support whatever mission your company has for them. And they're, you know, they're quick learners because they had to be in the military. So even if it's a little bit different, you know, and people sometimes make the joke about if they were in the infantry in the military and when they separate, well, you know, there's not really any companies that want to hire somebody that knows how to shoot things and blow things up. But yeah, but you got so many more skills than that just by, you know, being a squad leader in service or being, you know, somebody who was part of a team that had a mission and got the job done. And so I definitely think that companies should consider when they're hiring for different positions, rather than just saying we're looking for somebody with a four-year degree, how about somebody with a four-year degree or 4 years of military service? Mm. I mean, I think that you'd get as much bang for your buck and then some, you know?
Well, and I appreciate you bringing up the embassy bombings from 98 because I think it's another reminder that my own perception, and this is somewhat reinforced in conversations with my father, who had served overseas during the Vietnam War as an MP, my perception that we're still sort of slow to see how the idea of war and service have changed in that we are engaged in different places. It doesn't always look like the war we grew up studying. And mm-hmm. So maybe the average American isn't really thinking as much about it or would even say, well, we're not at war or we're not involved in a major war. There's interesting characterizations when you ask people, but I wonder if that has an impact on the way we think about what veterans are dealing with.
Oh, I think it definitely does. And I think that the risk we run into, again, you know, it's not really in vogue anymore. I mean, after 9/11, thank God our country came together and just, I think everybody had that very strong sense of unity and patriotism and support for our military men and women. And now here we are, 18 years later, we're still fighting the same war that we've been fighting for 18 years. It's the first time in our nation's history that our children have fought their parents' wars. The first time in our nation's history that we've had an entire generation of children who were born after a war started and graduated high school and the same war is still going on. And they've never known anything but for our country to be at war. I think the result, unfortunately, is they don't remember that we're at war. I mean, it's just not, it's not on the forefront of anybody's minds anymore. And so, you know, again, I mean, people are being shot at right now. People are in harm's way right now, and they're sacrificing, and they're spending months and years away from their loved ones. We've got folks here in this region who are getting ready to deploy in December. And you know, we'll be missing their loved ones at Christmas this year. I think that, you know, because of the way wars are fought, like you said, and because of, you know, medical advances and things like that, we don't see the list of casualties the way we did many years ago. But that doesn't mean that they're not experiencing significant physical and mental challenges when they come home. I mean, can you imagine being in a war zone for 5 years? We have a lot of men and women who are deployed 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And in the way that that changes, I think, the way your mind works when you come home, it's hard to even imagine how somebody reintegrates as successfully, you know, as we would hope. But they do. And that's, one of the wonderful things about our community is we have so many supports for them.
And before I turn to our other guests, just one more question in regards to your observation that, you know, kids are now serving in the war that their parents have served in, which is unique in American history. Is that just an observation from you, or is that a criticism?
Gosh, that was a tricky question. I think that I don't know if it's either one, really. It's definitely an observation, and I think that it's something that we're going to experience the effects of years from now, you know, that we may not really fully understand the implications of that right now. We have a very small military, and they're fighting in different places around the world. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just Iraq and Afghanistan. They're being deployed. They're guardians of places that many people have, you know, probably never even thought about. And so, you know, having our youngest generation engage in this war, I hope we can see an end to that sometime.
And by the way, that wasn't meant to be sort of an unfair question to Laura, who has to work not only as a veteran, but as the executive director of the Veterans Outreach Center. She works with people in a lot of different spheres, including politics. It's not meant to be a political commentary. And so I didn't mean a gotcha question with that.
No, but that's fine.
But I think we all share the desire to see a productive and constructive end to engagement wherever we can get there. It's a question of what that looks like.
I agree.
So, Terry Winslow, tell me about some of your service.
Well, I'm not as young as Laura, obviously. I served in 1977 through 1981 in the United States Coast Guard. Not a lot of people go in the Coast Guard, but at that time it piqued my interest. It seemed to be an area where I was destined to serve, all about helping people. And when I entered, it was post-Vietnam, and the perception of the military at that time was nothing short of baby killers. We're still trying to overcome that burden, and the folks coming back from Vietnam weren't readily accepted. There was a stereotype for us in the military. If you wore short hair in the 70s, you were pretty much targeted as you were a military guy, and you weren't readily accepted back into the workforce. I do want to say, however, that my military career is what formed me, and that's who I am. That's why I am the way I am. I'm now in a position where I'm able to help veterans because I realize what it is that they bring to the table. I was very fortunate when I got out. I went to work as an armed security guard at a nuclear plant. The perception was we were willing to take, Niagara Mohawk at the time, was willing to take people who were either a four-year bachelor's degree recipient or 4 years of military service, just like Laura alluded to. There was a perception that if you were able to enter the military successfully, complete your tour, your assignment, and to get out with an honorable discharge, that you accomplished something. You were disciplined. You paid attention to detail. You're exactly what you would want for someone that was out there on the perimeter protecting the nuclear facility. So I found it very welcoming in that respect. I didn't hesitate to go to work for them. They welcomed me with open arms and let me be who I was. And I also provided something that they were looking for. And I know that in the workforce that I manage now, that again is a welcome attribute. The fact that those folks have been standing post out there, paying attention to what's going on. It's who you want as a security force when you operate a casino. You know, there's things you look for, people coming through the doors. let's face it, the world isn't the friendliest place at times. So they need to pay attention to detail and know what's going on and have a keen eye as to what might be going on. So I personally, I would welcome the opportunity to put veterans to work. I see the benefit of what they have and what they bring to the table. And we are so fortunate to have a group of folks at Del Lago that that have served, and it really serves us well. I don't think a day goes by that I don't realize what it is that the veterans do offer. And to piggyback what Laura said about post 9/11, I think there's been a resurgence in our patriotism, and the fact that you visit schools now and you go around, you speak to kids about the Veterans Day, what's going on, and they're so in touch with what's going on in this world. She brings a good story to the table that she went to visit a school, and the young individuals, they drew pictures of what veterans mean to them, and to see them doing things like drawing a woman in combat, that's the picture that they put forward. It was nice to see. We don't just picture our veterans as being just a male-dominated force. There's diversity amongst the troops, and that, again, is a blessing. We realize that, you know, it's a different world, and it's not just a male-dominated world, and everybody that serves brings something different to the table, and we appreciate that out of them. I would hope that people that come back from overseas, or at least transition out of the military into the workforce, bring with them a degree of respect for themselves. They need to be proud of what they did. They need to be proud of the fact that they developed a skill set in the military. It's not just about what their MOS was, their military occupational specialist. It's all about what they've grown to be. You know, they do bring discipline. They do bring attention to detail. All of the things that you would be looking for as a manager, that's what you want. We can train them to do the specific job tasks, but if they haven't developed life skills and life experience, then it's more difficult. So we do appreciate the things that they've gained in the military, and it's a welcome group.
Yeah, so in a moment here, we'll talk a little bit more about why, you know, some places of business, and in this case, this hour, Del Lago is an example, but there are some that put a little bit more emphasis on this. And sometimes that comes simply from having a veteran in a position of leadership who knows and has that appreciation. We'll get to there in a moment. I want to go back a little bit, because you're right, in the 1970s, that there, in many ways, there were stigmas in society, and veterans really struggled with some of the perception coming back from Vietnam, with the winding down of Vietnam. Why did you decide to serve in the late 70s, watching all of that unfold?
I had a brother-in-law in the Air Force and a brother-in-law in the Army. And I realized that there's a devotion that you owed. I personally felt there was I owed my country for the things that I was a recipient of. And I felt somewhere along the line I had to serve, and I had to put forward some effort to thank my government for providing what they had. I was able to look past the Vietnam stigma, if you will, and say, I'm not going to get caught up in that. I want to go in. I want to serve my country. But at the same time, I also was a little selfish and wanted to develop some skill sets that would help me and take me forward. I knew about the fact that there would be veterans credits on any civil service test that I took, and I would benefit from that. And I thought, what better way to give myself a leg up than to go in the military, do my time, grow up, and come back and hopefully land in a profession that would benefit from that.
See, I would just say, I mean, I take the point you're making, but selfish I would not say is the right word. There's some self-interest in looking out for yourself, and there's actual benefit that you saw. So in 81 that comes around, when you are thinking about future work, did you have any struggle? Did you have any concern, or did that work for you right away?
It worked for me right away in that Niagara Mohawk was willing to accept veterans and accept the 4 years of military service as an equal to a four-year degree. My hope in life was to become a firefighter, which turned out to be my career. I left Niagara Mohawk and went to be a municipal firefighter in the city of Auburn. Spent 20 years working in the fire department, fire service, which is, again, team-oriented, same line of work as I was doing in the Coast Guard. Anytime you get to go out and help someone, and the primary mission of the Coast Guard at that time was search and rescue. So everything that I learned and I was trained for came to light in the fire service. So it served me well. I couldn't be any more thankful than what I am for the foundation laid in the military. And then ultimately I retired from the fire department, went back in the security world. So again, it just seems to be a reoccurring theme for me, helping people, watching over places, providing a degree of security. And the whole thing has come full circle, but I really appreciate where it led me.
Blair Morgan is a veteran and the vice president of human resources at Del Lago Resort and Casino, who is on the line with us. Blair, tell us a little bit about your story and your service.
Well, my story is similar to Laura and Terry, and also to you, because I was an MP in the Army, so I share what your dad did. I was in from 1982 to 1988, and when I transitioned, I had the very, to Laura's point, I had the thought process of, I'm a soldier. I didn't want to be in law enforcement. My skills aren't transferable. What am I going to be able to do? So I kind of had that internal monologue going on. And I was fortunate when I entered the casino industry that a veteran hired me and recognized that I had those types of soft skills. Leadership and teamwork, problem solving, decision making, honesty, attention to detail. And I had a global perspective because I served 2 years overseas. And this is a distinct advantage in our globalizing economy these days. So for me, as the Vice President of Human Resources, I look for that type of skill set because, to Terry's point, we can hire someone and train them on the mechanics of jobs, but what we can't instill and what's learned over time, and our military people do learn those soft skills at a very young age. They know what it is to have to make a decision quickly. They understand, you know, safety, organizational imperatives, all of those things are very, very transferable. I had a veteran recognize that in me, and my first job in the casino was actually, I was a security guard. And this is back in Colorado, and I'm a recent relocating to New York as of a year ago, and I'm very proud to work for Del Lago. Del Lago is a very thoughtful community contributor and partner and honors veteran service, and being in charge of and partnering with people in the organization to promote veteran hiring is extremely important to me. I am a success story in this industry because just like in the military, there are over 7,000 different types of jobs, and there are many civilian counterparts to it. Yeah, I don't go around and explode bombs or do those things, but what I did learn, completely transferable. I also know what it is to manage veterans who suffer from PTSD or have these things that are very relevant to this point of an 18-year war. I also am the mother of three veterans myself, with a son who served in 2 tours overseas in combat and suffers from PTSD. So this initiative is very near and dear to my heart, and I am passionate about it, grateful to work for an organization like Del Lago, who has these wonderful community initiatives.
Let me jump in, Blair, and just say that in a moment here, we're going to kind of pivot the conversation, and as we talk about employment and unemployment among U.S. veterans on this Veterans Day. But before I go to only break, let me ask Laura, do you tend to see, from your perspective as the executive director of the Veterans Outreach Center, that the organizations that are maybe more open to veterans are more, not just open, I mean, that almost has a stigma itself, celebrate and welcome and really want to attract veterans, tend to have leadership executives who are veterans themselves? Does that tend to be true?
I think that, well, it's definitely true that organizations who have veterans, you know, in their leadership ranks are very welcoming to veterans. I would say, you know, in almost every case. I think the other, group of organizations that tend to be very welcoming and excited about hiring veterans are groups that have had a number of veterans within their organization in the past. I think that, and where they recognize that. I mean, sometimes companies don't talk about that a whole lot, and so they don't even realize how many veterans they may have, you know, in their within their employ. But definitely, you know, we find that the more we talk to companies and we work directly with them and we send them, you know, individuals who we know would be a good fit, they come back to us time and again and say, send me more. You know, we're looking for more people like this because that was a great hire that we just made. And, you know, we want more people like that.
Let me get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with our guests. You just heard Laura Stradley from the VOC. Terry Winslow and Blair Morgan are with us. They are both veterans, and they work for Del Lago Resort and Casino, which has put some emphasis on making sure that veterans not only have an open door, but really they seek out the skills and put them to good use in various positions there. And we're talking about the unemployment rate and the challenges and opportunities for veterans when it comes to navigating the job market and reintegrating. It is Veterans Day. We appreciate the service and the time, and let's get that only break, and we'll be right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Tuesday on The Next Connections. As we approach the holidays, a historian has made it part of his mission to dispel fairy tales that we might tell ourselves about how enslaved people were treated, especially around Christmas time. Confronting our true history, even if it hurts, with historian Robert May, Tuesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I was just remarking to our guests during our brief break that I'm hearing from a number of veterans thanking us for these 2 hours of conversation. And by the way, if you missed, on Friday, we had a wonderful conversation putting the spotlight on women who are veterans and some of the occasional mental health struggles that can happen, but also some of the great work that the Flower City Arts Center has done on a phenomenal project. So you ought to check out that conversation as well here. And I was mentioning that I'm hearing from some people who I didn't, some that I knew are veterans and some I did not know. Mm-hmm. So it's great to hear from so many people around our community. And let me just read a comment from my friend Andre Evans, who sends this note, who says, thanks to your guests for the great work that they do. And thank you for highlighting 2 great hours of important information. I wish the industries would understand who and what we are as veterans. The myth many employers have about our service not mattering smacks in the face that many people have. And Andre goes on to say that that there are these stigmas or stereotypes about everything from project managers to other kinds of work, the limitations that businesses and industries might put. And said that he said the checklist pilots use are all examples of a relaxed or dumbed down version of how we think, lead, plan, and execute in our missions. And industry is bypassing great innovative leaders by placing us in less fulfilling jobs, denying our service, denying our own intelligence. You want to add to that, Laura? I think that's powerful stuff from Andre.
I do, and I know Andre, and he's a great guy and a good advocate for veterans in our community, so I'm glad he wrote in. I think that, you know, the unfortunate thing is as an employer, I know when I go to hire somebody, you know, I obviously am looking for somebody who I think is going to do a phenomenal job for the organization, who's going to fit in with our culture. And frankly, if there's, you know, a lot of red flags about somebody, I think employers can't help but think, oh, you know, could this be a liability? Is this something that I want to go out on a limb for? The problem is they associate sometimes that with veterans. And instead of having the opposite perspective, they see a resume come through and it says somebody had military service. And this is not all employers, but many of them might look at that and say, gee, could this be a liability? I've heard so much on the news about PTSD. I don't want somebody who's going to lose it in the workplace, or, gee, you know, I don't want to have to make accommodations for somebody. I want them to be able to just get in there and get the job done. And the reality is, at least, you know, for all the veterans that I've hired at Veterans Outreach Center at the county and different places, I've never had to make an accommodation. I've never had somebody who lost it in the workplace. I mean, those situations are just, they're misnomers. And as we, you know, look to educate the public on what PTSD challenges might look like, the unfortunate side effect of that sometimes is it causes people to be fearful, and they start to think, gee, if somebody is going through that, what might they do in the workplace? That's just, you know, it's not the right perspective to have. And it's one of the reasons why I love hearing that Del Lago has hired a woman who is a veteran in, you know, such a high position in HR. I'm sure that Blair probably does not have that kind of perspective. She looks at somebody who may be applying, looks at, you know, that they have military service and thinks, wow, you know, this is, let's put this one at the top of the pile. I'm excited to hear that companies are doing things like that, and I hope that more of them will continue to do that.
You want to add to that, Blair?
I'd love to add to that. I completely agree with you, Laura, that the civilian's perception can be a barrier. I think as an HR professional, it's my role to teach, you know, my hiring managers and the organization, Del Lago, understands it, and that I, again, I'm appreciative of it. But in my career, part of my role is to teach my managers when they hire that this talent pool that you can encounter is amazing. And you're exactly right. I do put it to the top of the pile because what I can't teach somebody is what does it look like to show up on time in uniform, ready to rock and roll, execute the job that you're supposed to do. And it's a non-negotiable to someone that's been in the military. That's you're trained to do. So to your point of, you know, it's a misnomer. It's not in actuality what's going on when we employ our veterans. They're very good at the job. And if we do have some type of thing that we have to address. I've been in the industry for 24 years. So have I seen this? I've seen this as an operational manager, but I understand that the one young man that I'm thinking of who I managed in a table game area, not here in New York, but I had a conversation with him and I knew what his triggers were. And we need to understand as employers, people that, especially combat veterans, when they're transitioning and you're doing something and someone is complaining to you at the table or when they get their food and it's cold, and those kinds of triggers to our veterans are, for 2 years I didn't have a hot meal, or you're going to complain that you have the luxury to lose $2,000. You know, so there's just certain things. So it's education on both sides, helping our veterans transition, aligning the resources for them, and educating your hiring managers and the organization who is not familiar with veterans and what they may have been exposed to or what they're dealing with. But it's true with any worker that you may have PTSD or some type of mental illness that you have to deal with, very real things in our society.
Yeah, so
as an HR professional, you deal with that anyway.
I think this is, I want to put a point in this part of the conversation because I think there's a number of things that are kind of layered and important here. First of all, what Blair just said is true. Every organization, I would hope, is getting better at seeing that mental health is health, that mental illness is illness. And there are people in every office and every workforce who have depression, who may have PTSD or other forms of mental illness, and they may or may not be veterans. This is
right.
That is just health. Now, to the extent that PTSD and certain forms of mental illness are higher among veterans, I want to relate, and this is, I got to be careful, this is a population of one, but it was a very interesting conversation I had this past summer with a person who is a veteran, who is extremely active in their community, working, back in school, planning a future, has a family. And what he said to me, and I'd like all three of you to sort of weigh on this. I'll start with Laura on this. What he said to me was, he said, you know, PTSD can be rough for me. And it can hit me at times when I don't expect it. But he said, for me, the biggest concern I have with that is the impact it can have on my marriage, on family life. But he said, I feel such a devotion and a duty to any workplace or any and coaching that I don't think I could ever miss a minute, not show up, et cetera. So the concern I have is my personal life in the future, my personal relationships that occasionally get frayed because of moments or stress or temper or issues. Now, that's a population of one, but it was a very interesting comment because it doesn't say that PTSD is not a concern at all or wouldn't manifest, but it was an interesting look at how it may and the help that he in particular as a veteran needs. What do you make of that?
Well, a few things. I could definitely say I know some people who would agree wholeheartedly with that statement. Also, you know, in my former work for Monroe County, we worked on benefits claims for veterans who are experiencing any type of physical or mental health issue. And so I was very familiar with what the VA looks at in terms of markers for PTSD and in terms of how they rate somebody with post-traumatic stress disorder, how disabling it is. And there are, you know, depending on how disabling it is, they're looking for things like, is it impacting your social relationships? Is it impacting your work relationships? And what's interesting is that, you know, some people will have one and not the other. I mean, and the VA recognizes that. I think it's widely recognized that you're not necessarily going to have all of those, you know, every single symptom. But I think, you know, for a lot of people, there is that sense of, I mean, the workplace is where the mission is, and that is so important to a person who has served in accomplishing the mission. And, you know, the family, I mean, I think we can all, anybody probably who's ever experienced any kind of, whether it's mental health or just a bad day, I mean, the family is your safety zone. And so that's where you can sometimes, unfortunately, you know, let a little bit more out, and that is not always good. I mean, sometimes it is, but, you know, I think that that can certainly be the case for some people. You know, I was thinking, too, in one other additional thought to kind of this entire conversation was just that, you know, veterans in the workplace, they treat the workplace in many ways like a family. And so I will have, you know, some days sometimes at work that are difficult. You know, maybe things didn't go well. Maybe we got a budget cut or something. And it's my veteran staff who will, at the end of the day, send me a text message, give me a call, send me an email, and just say, you know, I know it was a tough day today. I got your six. Let me know if you need anything. That is without fail, you know, over and over again with, and not to say that my civilian staff aren't wonderful too, because they are phenomenal, but the veterans, they think about that. At the end of the day, we're all still family, you know, and they want to make sure that, you know, we all know that we've got each other's backs. Mm. So I think that's big.
Terry, you want to weigh in on that? Go ahead.
I do. To your point, I think it's relatively new in the world, and I'm talking maybe 15 years ago before we even started to recognize what PTSD was. You can't treat something that you don't even know exists. So it's been a great movement for us to realize that our veterans coming back are experiencing things that people who don't enter the military don't ever see. So I'm glad that we've taken the time to identify and now to start to work on the process. When we do have veterans working for us who may drift at times or experience PTSD, you're so right about the family, and you mentioned I got your six. I think you need to explain that because not everybody understands.
Yeah, do that, Laura.
That's probably a newer phrase, I think, to this generation of warfighters. But, you know, if you're thinking about a clock on the wall, you've got the 12 o'clock and then the 6 o'clock, and they're opposite directions of each other. So I got your six is kind of like I got your back. You know, I'm watching in the other direction for you so that you can keep moving straight ahead and you know, be safe. And so that's just kind of what that means.
Good. I'm glad you clarified
that. Yeah.
No, go ahead, Terry.
The family thing, it does exist. Not everybody has a stable family life, and more times than not, their workforce family is who they have and who they turn to. And I do see guidance from folks that have been there before to the newer folks that maybe they need a helping hand or just some direction and where to go and where to turn to. And military, more than any other walk of life, people do have each other's back. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm very thankful that the folks that work for me reach out and touch each other and give them the kind of the confidence boost that they need in order to be successful. And I couldn't be more thankful for the veterans that we have that actually do that and lead by example.
Yeah. So, Blair, on that note, you know, your service in the 1980s, Terry's in the 1980s, it seems to me that things are pretty different, especially in one regard. You know, sharing the story that I talked about, the veteran who I was talking to this summer about his own PTSD, we have more self-awareness, more diagnosis, and more ability to talk about it, just as I hope, again, civilian population, we can talk about our depression, the way our brains work. People have migraines. People have all kinds of brain chemistry, mental health issues, et cetera. I think we're getting more self-aware about that, and I'm frankly really grateful for that, because that means to the extent that a veteran is dealing with that, they can talk about it. They can talk with their managers, and especially if their manager is a veteran themselves, well then, you know, if we got to make a plan for how we want to engage in certain things, we can do that. How do you feel about that, Blair?
I think that's exactly right. We have to be prepared to help our team members if they have the issues, and I certainly am equipped to do that. As I said, you know, my son, when I served, it was not during wartime per se. I mean, we'd have the embassy attacks and those things to the point of you never know what's going on all around the world. I just feel very supported at my place of work and know that it was very important to me to feel welcome like that. And I've seen in my career just being able to talk about mental health is a health issue, and the openness that the workplace has for whatever the issue is, we are having to face that together as a team, just as you do in the military. You've got your six, and it doesn't matter whether you're civilian or whether you're military. I lead with those values as a veteran myself because that's how I think about things. It's very mission. It's very team. It's let's accomplish this together.
So let me get some feedback from listeners on this Veterans Day. Maria in Rochester on the phone first. Go ahead, Maria.
Hi, yeah. I was just listening while I was driving home, and I'm feeling like a very rosy picture is being painted about veterans in the military. And that whole thing about I got your six. Well, for women who are sexually assaulted in the military or for people who have PTSD, often they are discouraged, they're shamed, they're threatened to not expose those situations. And I guess the other thing I have a problem with is within military culture, you have to always obey orders no matter what. And I don't think that's healthy in a civil society.
So, Maria, when you say people are shamed or told not to disclose, you mean by the military leadership itself?
Yes, by the military leadership itself.
Okay. I appreciate the perspective, Maria. Thank you for this. Laura, what do you think?
Well, Maria's right. I mean, you know, I don't know how challenging that particular issue is these days. I suspect still very challenging. I know it was when I was in. I mean, that's very true. I mean, women are victimized at a very high rate in the military with sexual trauma. You know, more than a third. Men experience it too, and I think they probably experience that level of shame in a way that, you know, is just catastrophic for them. So and they don't report for different reasons. But I hope that as that issue continues to gain traction, you know, with our legislators and folks in positions of leadership in the military, my hope is that will continue to get better. I don't know if it will or not. I think the comment about, you know, obeying orders at all costs, that's a trickier area to navigate. I mean, there's definitely a need to understand the importance of obeying orders, because if when people got into a combat situation, they had the ability to say, no thanks, I don't really feel like doing that, somebody else is going to have to do it, we'd have no combat readiness. And so, you know, the sexual assault issue aside, I think by and large, you know, our military men and women have a code of ethics that they are supposed to follow. And there are recourse opportunities for somebody, you know, to go to an inspector general or somebody else outside the chain of command if they have to, if something is going on within their command that's not ethical. And I know a unit that I was in at Fort Benning, actually our first sergeant was relieved of command because of that. And people had to basically be whistleblowers. And so it does happen, but there are measures available in those situations.
Let me read an email from Benjamin who says, Evan, thank you for committing the time to Vets. It's appreciated. I was an air traffic controller in the U.S. Navy, and upon separating, there were very limited openings since President Reagan fired all of the controllers when they went on strike in the 80s. Given this, all of the, at the time, current positions had not yet reached retirement age. And with that being said, my service has actually done very little for my work life. It is disheartening to me on one level, but at the end of the day, I am appreciative of all that I learned in my service, and I would not trade those experiences for anything. That comes from Benjamin. So what he's saying is, unfortunately, sadly for him, in the 3+ decades since, it hasn't helped him in the way that he had hoped, in the way that it has for Terry, and in the way that it has for Blair. And in the way that Laura has made it work for her after some employers told her that it wouldn't help her. But Laura, let's return to a theme that you brought up earlier, which is that when young or new veterans, as we would classify them now, are looking for work in the current job market, they may find jobs pretty easily, and they're often minimum wage or lower paying jobs, hourly jobs with no benefits, et cetera. Benjamin didn't find that it paid off for him. And going back to the 1980s, if it's going to pay off today now, is this a function of the fact that our job market in general, and again, we probably need an economist for this, but the job market in general has a lot more jobs that are hourly, low paying, no benefits? Or do you think veterans in particular are finding that that's where they're told to land instead of seeing more opportunity?
Probably a little bit of both, I would say. I think, you know, one of the things I think Terry mentioned earlier is that some of us are just, you know, maybe kind of called to service. And I think sometimes we find that people who enter into the you know, world of service tend not to be very good self-advocates. You know, they're not the ones that are going to go out and really, when you're in a job interview, you've got to sell yourself and you got to sell your skills. And same thing even on your resume. And so, you know, we unfortunately find that sometimes veterans are not comfortable expressing just how much they have to offer. And so that's, you know, one of the areas that we work hard in at Veterans Outreach Center to help them through that. But we also, you know, I don't like to put all the burden on the veteran either. I mean, we have to help employers find the value themselves and appreciate it. You know, it's, to me, it's a win for the employer when they get somebody who is a veteran within their ranks. And so even if that person is young and they don't have the college degree, I would challenge employers to question their own markers for success. Does a college degree actually, is that actually a necessity for your job, or is that just a tool you're using to weed out, you know, individuals? Because if so, put the military piece in there as a possible, you know, identifier. But so I think, you know, that's, you know, veterans who are younger, some of them don't have college degrees yet. Some of them don't have those kind of arbitrary skills that employers think they need. And so they just, you know, they don't end up being eligible for certain jobs.
I'd like our other two guests to, in our last couple of minutes, give their final thoughts. But briefly, if people need help or you want to let them know about the Veterans Outreach Center, how can they find you?
Yeah, there's three easy ways. They can stop in. We're at 459 South Ave in Rochester. They can get online at vocroc.org. That's vocroc.org. And there's a button you can press that says, I'm looking for services. And you can just ask a question or, you know, whatever you need, and we'll get back to you. And the third way is to just give us a call, 546-1081.
Blair Morgan, Del Lago is a place that employs a lot of people who have served. What's your message for other employers in our community?
I think that if you're not seriously taking a look at our veterans, you're missing opportunity for some of the best talent pool that you can recruit from.
That's a powerful closing message there. You want to add to the closing argument, Terry Winslow?
Sure, I do. In Cayuga County, I have a resource that I reach to quite often. He's the veterans representative at the employment office, and they're located at the local community college, Cayuga Community College. And He oftentimes picks the phone up, calls me, and says, "Say, hey, Terry, I have a veteran who has a security background. He'd be a great fit for your organization. What can you do to help him?" And the first thing that we do is they have to be a New York State licensed security guard. And he takes them through that process. He leads them, actually provides the funding to get them the training that they need in order to get a license so that they can come to work seamlessly. So I do appreciate and preach that our veterans look to those services so that they can transition not only into our company, but into any company that they feel they're a good fit. And to Benjamin's point, please let me say one thing. Benjamin, thank you for your service. It may not have been exactly your destiny to be an air traffic controller on the outside, but believe me, you picked up skills that were invaluable and so needy in this world. And if your employer recognizes that, you're going to rise through the ranks and be the person that you should be. Not always the same thing. You don't go into Army to be a cook and come out to be a chef. You just gain skills that are far more valuable than just the minor or the narrow skill set that you develop in there.
Terry, thank you for your service. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Blair Morgan from Del Lago on the line with us. Thank you for your service. Thanks for taking the time for the program today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And Laura Stradley from the Veterans Outreach Center, thank you for your service and thank you for the work you're doing in this community.
Thanks for having me.
I'm thinking about all of the veterans on this Veterans Day, but in particular, people like my father who almost never talk about their service. That's just a choice. It's the way some people cope. And if you're in that category, just know that's totally up to you, but you are loved and appreciated too. So thanks, Dad, and thanks to everyone who has served. Our thanks to Bob and Rob Braden Engineering and Emma Ray Stein, who is our intern. Megan Mack is the outstanding producer of Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice and safe night. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.